Hello, and welcome to Checking the Gate, a film and religion podcast. I am Michael M. Patty.
And I am Robert Wright Stasko.
And this is episode 20, our Christmas extravaganza. That's a little joke. It follows up on our Easter extravaganza. In this episode, we will be discussing one of my favorite Christmas movies. It's a perennial holiday classic, It's a Wonderful Life. And a rescheduling note, we will not be discussing Highway to Heaven in this episode due to lack of availability on either Netflix or proper television airwaves.
And I'm not buying it on DVD.
And we're not buying it on DVD. So we're going to hang on to that, keep it in the back pocket for a little while, and get to it in another show. But for the time being, we're just going to talk about It's a Wonderful Life. And then we've got a little bonus at the end of the episode, some deleted scenes.
Yes, we'll have News Corner. We'll discuss some of the news that's come up, namely the sale of Star Wars to Disney in a warm-up segment that Mike and I did last time we recorded. So we'll have that for your listening pleasure today.
Not to be confused with our eventual Star Wars episode.
Yeah.
This is not it.
In our future episode, we're going to delve into, you know, the more religious aspects of the film. I found a bunch of other film and religion books and that really, really see a lot more religion in there that I've ever seen. And I've seen it a bunch of times, so it would be interesting, you know, and of course, delve into the work of Joseph Campbell and all that.
But I kind of want to keep teasing it like Vera on Cheers. You know, it's always talked about, but never actually shown until,
yes,
like the last episode or something.
Well, hopefully we have a lot more episodes to go before we get there.
Right.
But today we're going to augur the future, and Mike and I are going to give you our predictions on who's going to be in the movies, who's going to be directing them, and so forth. So it'll be fun.
And I think some of it is might be a little dated even since we recorded it, because a few more people have pulled out of contention.
You never know. These things can change.
Yeah.
It's changed so much, and it's only been like, about a month?
October 30th.
Since the news. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's more excitement to come.
Yes.
Well, let's get started talking about Mike's favorite holiday movie.
Second favorite.
What's your first favorite?
Scrooged.
I'd have to say that's mine as well.
But we're not here to talk about Scrooged.
You know what?
Yeah.
That'll be next time. It'll be next Christmas. We got plenty of Christmas movies. So. But It's a Wonderful Life. My voice is failing. I'm just getting over a cold.
Oh, you sound fine.
Yeah, I was leading worship today at a church, and I sounded like Neil Diamond. So we got the Neil Diamond Christmas album at church this morning. But anyways, so Mike, why don't you give us the rundown of the classic It's a Wonderful Life.
All right, a little background. It's a Wonderful Life came out in, I believe, 1946. Yeah, 1946. And it stars Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, Lionel Barrymore, Thomas Mitchell, and Henry Travers as Clarence the Angel. For a lot of years, It's a Wonderful Life was, I believe, in public domain, or there was some loophole. TV stations didn't have to pay royalty fees, or they didn't have to pay to show It's a Wonderful Life. And that's why it was always on. For many, many years. It was
like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, it was aired continuously, sometimes cut down to run in 2 hours with commercials, sometimes colorized.
Yeah.
And it was on a lot.
I remember seeing it even in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Like it was almost like a continual loop.
Yeah.
From Thanksgiving to Christmas.
Yeah, it was shown the way A Christmas Story or Elf are shown just nonstop.
Yeah.
Now, that has since changed. I don't know who bought the rights to it. NBC shows it 2 or 3 times a year now in prime time. It really is an excellent film, directed by Frank Capra, came out after the war, and it's about the best man you've ever met. All he wants to do is live out his dreams and go places, see the world, go exploring, could care less about starting a family. But of course, what ends up happening is he gets stuck in his little hometown and running his father's business building houses, and eventually, I don't know why I'm giving the plot. Anybody's seen this a million times, but...
Well, actually, I did, because
okay.
I only sat down and watched it once during those times, because it was on so much, I didn't really pay too much attention to it. So
yeah,
when it was on last night on NBC, I sat down and really watched it, and I caught a lot that I hadn't seen before. So yeah, because he settles down, he gets married, he has kids.
Yeah. Did you catch the names of his two friends, the police officer and the
yes,
taxi driver?
Yes, Bert and Ernie.
Yes, that is where those names came from. That
yeah.
is not a coincidence.
As we get on in our review, there's a lot of things I see how influential this film was, but
yeah.
But keep going, he gets married, and
yeah.
and then his drunk uncle makes
his,
a mistake.
His drunk uncle loses some money, and it's on Christmas Eve on the night the bank examiner comes to town. And of course, the bank examiner is in a hurry, and there's no time to sort it out. All of a sudden, he's short $8,000 and might be headed to prison.
Because the bad guy,
right.
Mr.
Potter, the town boss.
The Scrooge of the town.
Right. Oh my God, that would make an awesome sequel. He ends up with the money and, of course, doesn't give it back. And so all of a sudden, George is facing financial and personal ruin, might be going to jail. So he's despondent. He's had a little too much to drink. He decides to throw himself over the bridge. But before he does, he prays. And in answer to his prayers, he is sent an angel. An angel in training who doesn't have his wings yet. It's actually a very small part of the movie where George is granted his wish to see what his hometown would be like if he'd never been born. And he meets the entire, like, two-thirds of the movie is spent building up George's character and the supporting players in his life. And without all of that, the part where he's... It could have been like Back to the Future, where most of it is spent in the past. You know, it could have been that, and thankfully it's not.
Yeah.
I'm getting ahead of myself, though. He sees what the town would be like if he'd never been born. And
instead of Bedford Falls, it's Pottersville.
Pottersville. And by the end of the movie, of course, it doesn't take him long to realize that the world is a better place with him in it. So he finds it in him to pray once more and is reunited with his friends and family, and everybody in town chips in to help him out, and he ends up richer than Mr. Potter. The end.
The end. He can't help but, you know, tear up and feel a little sentimental during this movie, because it doesn't really manipulate you into feeling that way. Because of Stewart's performance, I mean, he really takes this sort of fantastic thing and grounds it in a reality, because you could really identify with him. You know, a man with dreams just can't get away from his, what he calls his dumb old town, and every chance he has to get away is sort of squashed at the last moment. You know, when it comes down to him losing the money, he comes home and he's got, you know, his beautiful wife and his beautiful kids, and he comes in just yelling and hollering and, stop playing that piano, you're making all this racket.
Yeah. Why do we have to have so many kids?
That's pretty good.
Years of practice, my friend. Thank you.
But, you know, I identify with that. I'm like that, you know, like every other day with my kids when I come home from work. But
for those of you who haven't met Robert's kids.
Yes, I only have three. But I love them.
Is that it?
I love them, but man, they keep me on my toes. But yes, they could attest that there's times where I'm not the best father I could be. So yes, James Stewart is a good representative of the everyman. Yeah,
perfectly cast in this movie.
One of the things that really struck me, you know, because like I said, I hadn't sat down and actually watched, was the beginning. It begins with, you know, shots of people's houses from the outside, and you hear bits of prayers. Please be with George, you know, help him out. Please be with my daddy, he's having a hard time, which is very interesting. And then there's a huge pullback, sort of Kenneth Branagh style. Maybe he got the idea from watching Capra movies all these years.
Ken Burns?
Kenneth Branagh.
Okay.
You know, well, with his big long shots, you know.
Okay, and I was thinking like on the documentaries where he pans on the vote. Never mind.
No, I'm thinking about where he sort of like in Thor, where he goes from Earth and out into space. Okay. You know, and
like Robert Zemeckis in Contact.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he pulls back into outer space, and then you see like the galaxy sort of glowing. And mm-hmm. and the first thing that popped into my brain was that episode of Futurama where Bender gets shot into space and he's talking with God. I'm like,
oh yeah,
that's where they got this from. Oh, they got it from It's a Wonderful Life. And it's not really God. It's like, I thought it was God and an angel, but it's actually two angels.
Yeah, it's deliberately not God.
Yeah, and they're talking about Joseph, and I'm like, an angel named Joseph. I'm like, is this like Joseph, like Jesus' dad? I'm like, well, why does it just talk to Jesus? But I don't know.
Non-denominational. That's
yes,
why.
I think they didn't want to get too Christian with it.
Right. Frank Capra may have been Jewish also.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% on that. It's designed for mass appeal. It's not supposed to be, you know, everybody can feel good about angels. Then.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess we'll get into that more later. But yeah, I mean, he would have really been thinking about what would appeal to a massive amount of people. And apparently it didn't, because this movie...
It did not do well when it first was released.
Right. It took on a life of its own because of the free distribution it got on TV. But sort of like what happened with Wizard of Oz and Princess Bride. They became cult classics after the fact. I didn't realize how just sort of seeped in spirituality the whole movie really was. You know, right from the beginning... You have that, and then the two senior angels are going to talk to Clarence and help him out so he can earn his wings. I never grew up in school learning about angels. That wasn't on the syllabus for, you know, and then, you know, so like teacher says when the bell rings and angels get his wings.
I never heard that either. For all, I've never heard it outside of the movie.
Yeah.
Either.
So I guess it follows sort of like the same movie rules that Constantine did when we were talking. So, yeah, this is actually a good follow-up to that, you know, because that movie we were talking about demons.
No, it's not.
And this movie we're talking about angels and stuff. So,
on our next episode, angels and demons.
No. I also like the way this was shot. Frank Capra, definitely a master of his craft. It never feels like it's on a set, though I'm pretty sure it was. I never
thought about it.
I'm sure it was a backlot or something in some of the things, you know, the Bedford Falls. I mean, it's all contained within that little city. I mean, just there's a lot of symbolism and stuff in there. Like when they're in the bank and he's trying to make sure that Potter doesn't take over the town, and he was trying to stand up for people, and he's trying to leave for school at the same time, I think. And there's
His honeymoon. He's trying to leave for his honeymoon.
It's one of those two times. I can't remember exactly, but there's a raven standing like right in the middle of the shot. There's a big black bird.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a joke I have with my wife. You know, it's like, what does the bird mean? You know, because it's always been classically a symbol of death, and it's like in everything. And it's like in The Matrix when Agent Smith comes walking out in the second movie, and there's all the birds flying away. He's like, what does the birds mean? So I guess it's only funny to me and my wife.
Possibly.
Just no reason for the bird to be there in the middle of a bank. It's just there.
He's the office pet.
So, you know, bad things are coming.
Yeah. But then they don't, and it's okay.
Until later.
Yeah.
And when he's running around town in the sort of alternate reality, it is sort of like a Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
It does sort of borrow that story convention, but we get his past as Clarence is learning about his whole life. And then, you know, we get the sort of alternate reality present. It's sort of like Back to the Future too. You know?
Yes, it is.
It's exactly like that. So you see how influential this movie has been all through cinematic history. But the point I want to make, you know, he's just gone to his mother's house, and she turns away. She doesn't know who he is. And he kind of runs up to the camera, and there's a close-up of his sweaty face. And I'm like, how many times have I seen that in, like, the Twilight Zone?
Yeah. Didn't Hitchcock do that in a movie or two?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Jimmy Stewart was a favorite of Hitchcock, too, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this movie is so ubiquitous to us now, but there's a lot of things that in this movie that may have seemed cliche, but I think it was like the originator of certain shots, certain story conventions that have sort of permeated cinematic history.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a movie from the 40s.
No, it doesn't.
It feels ahead of its time, just in the technical, the staging, the pacing. It's over 2 hours long, which was long for a movie back then. It's still kind of long now, but there were a lot more hour and a half, 100-minute movies back then. This thing clocks in at like 2:15.
Yeah.
And that was unusual. I don't know what it is about this one in particular. I've seen other movies from the 40s, and even Citizen Kane isn't paced quite like this.
Yeah.
And maybe Casablanca. Casablanca moves along, too.
But this one, I mean, you really invest in the character.
Yeah.
Because he's so self-sacrificial. And, you know, you want to see him come out at, you know, on top at the end.
Yeah.
But up until then, you think, oh, this guy's going to end up like Willie Loman. And another thing is, like, the whole subplot of him fighting for the working man against, you know, the big greedy banker. That is sort of timeless. It was probably, maybe even at the time, a little, like, past the time of the robber barons. that this man was, was definitely based on, like, a Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
or
a lot of people still remember the Depression.
Yeah. I think this movie has sort of a renewed interest in being able to identify with, you know, greedy fat cats. And but in terms of its spirituality, I think it misses the mark. It's sort of a made-up movie Christianity.
I think it was designed for mass appeal. It was designed for a movie. They make their own rules a little bit, and they keep it non-denominational. There was even inter-Christian prejudice back then.
Yeah.
Like, my grandpa was telling me around those times, he remembered seeing, like, Catholics need not apply signs for job openings. So
wow.
I wonder if maybe just not having it be Jesus and St. Peter, it was...
Yeah, or even Mary, when they break in, when they're in the alternate reality, and Clarence and George break into the house... And the policeman's there. Which one is he? Bert?
Bert the cop.
Bert the cop. Yeah, he's got Clarence on the ground. He's screaming, "Joseph, help me, Joseph!" I'm like, who the heck is Joseph?
Joseph was one of the
angels. He's one of the angels from the beginning. But I'm like, you know, wouldn't he scream like Jesus or Mary? But, you know, that would be too Christian or Catholic. So I could see how...
Yeah, they Capra do mention. Yeah, they do mention heaven, though.
Yeah,
they do make it clear that it's heaven.
Yeah, but it's the glowy,
like in Ghost,
Yeah. If you know, this would have made an excellent segue if we had actually watched Highway to Heaven and talked more about angels and
that was the plan.
Yeah, but you know, at that time, I think after Highway to Heaven went off the air, then that it wasn't long after that Touched by an Angel came on.
Yeah.
And there's this big thing about angels, and it's all right to believe in angels, but not believe, like, put all your trust in angels, like, oh, an angel's going to save me, an angel's going to do this. And as Christians, we put our hope and faith in Jesus Christ, not on his messengers.
Angels help those who help themselves.
Oh, please. Here, let me throw you a real piece of scripture, not a butchered Franklin quote. Here, this is from Galatians chapter 2, verse 18. Do not let anyone who delights in false humility and the worship of angels disqualify you. Such a person also goes in great detail about what they've seen, and they are puffed up with idle notions by their unspiritual mind. What Paul's talking about here is, first he's talking about trusting in Christ alone, and putting all your hope and your trust in him. And then, you know, you don't need to follow all these, like, human rules, like fasting all the time, or just sort of like how some denominations, like, don't dance, don't smoke, don't drink. You know, there's nothing in the Bible that says you can't do that. There's, like, just don't do that all the time. But some people go all the way and make these other rules, like, you can't do anything, like, can't have any fun, because fun leads to sin, and sin is bad, and you're going to die.
And that's why we have no more Puritans.
That's right. Because nobody likes having no fun.
I was going to say there were no new members.
Yeah, that's what happened with the Quakers.
Was it the Quakers?
Yes.
That's who I meant.
Yeah, the Quakers. They believed in leading an ascetic and celibate life.
And then where that got.
And they all died off. But, there's some Quakers who thought that, you know, being married was okay. But that sort of strain of ultra Quakerism died out with its original believers. But there are still Quakers, but they're, I think, a little more moderate. But if you're on a bridge and you think that your life is going bad, and
don't do it.
Yeah, don't expect a wingless angel to come down trying to help you.
Think of the survivors. Don't do it.
Yeah, or, you know, think of how much...
Get helped. Especially $8,000. $8,000 is not worth it.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot more money back then.
I know.
But still.
And this is what they don't mention in the movie. A lot of times, life insurance policies don't cover suicide just for that reason.
Oh, yeah. Again, this movie was influential in the real world.
Yeah.
But at the same time... he was, you know, thinking about throwing himself off the bridge, and Clarence is there to help him. You know, his wife was out getting the support of the town, even though he didn't tell her what was going on. She was smart enough to figure it out. Or she intercepted a phone call.
Somebody told her.
Yeah. But she called all the friends, and the whole town turned out to help him out. It's sort of a weak moral that, you know, life's worth living if you have friends. But if you... Some people who have a really harsh life, you know, like another movie. I just watched yesterday, too, The Color Purple.
I have not seen that. I'm not familiar with it.
Steven Spielberg film. I didn't want to watch it because it's kind of harsh. It's a harsh movie.
Oh, yeah?
It deals a lot with abuse and racism, you know, sexual, physical, emotional abuse. Like all Spielberg movies, there's a plethora of hope in it, especially at the end. There's a lot of resolution, restitution, people who are separated being brought back together, having their wounds healed. And that comes through Christ. And sometimes, you know, you don't have, you know, friends around you. And like in The Color Purple, there, you know, some of these women are just isolated and lonely. They have to hold on to something. And there's a greater hope there than just, I have a lot of friends in town. But it worked out for George Bailey, so...
Yeah. It's just an uplifting couple of hours, and, you know, if it doesn't make you feel good, then go watch A Christmas Carol and turn it off before The Ghost of Christmas Future shows up.
I really like this movie, and...
It's wonderful.
I am going to make an effort to watch it at least once a year, because it's finely crafted, finely acted... I thought the music was kind of hokey, especially at the beginning.
It's from the 40s.
Yeah. Again, things that weren't cliche then are cliche now. So overall, it's an excellent film, and it deserves the fame that it has garnered over the years.
Absolutely.
And that's my final thoughts. What are your final thoughts?
I love it, and I can't wait to watch it again this holiday season.
Dope.
And yes, I said holiday.
All right. So now I think we're going to move on to our news corner. All right, so I finally found that article that I was hinting at last time when we were talking about Fireproof. It was in a variety of newspapers. It was by a person named Corey Bennett called Christian Films Find Fans at the Multiplex. And it's talking about how the company that made the original Left Behind, they're going to Cloud 10 Productions. They're going to reboot it. They spent a total of $12 million on the first three movies that they made with Kirk Cameron.
Combined. Wow.
They're putting $15 million in just this reboot because they're seeing a lot of profitability in these movies.
That seems weird to me because the article I read in Entertainment Weekly was that it was going to be less Bible-y.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, they were deliberately making it more mainstream than it even was before.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to have Ghost Rider in it. Because seriously, Nicolas Cage is in talks to be in this new Left Behind movie, which is going to be interesting.
That's Academy Award winner Ghost Rider.
I'll put a link up. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen on YouTube. It's a conversation with Nicolas Cage's agent. It's about, okay, I got this new script. It's about a Nazi who only speaks in adverbs.
I'll take it.
No, Nicholas, you got to say no to these things. I'll do it. It's called swastically. And it just gets more hilarious. It's a little off color. So, you know, parental guidance is suggested.
But it's nothing that's not going to be in the new Left Behind movie.
I'll do it. But anyways, getting back to this article, you know, we talked about Fireproof in our last episode. It came out in 2008, and what we didn't realize when we were talking about it, it was that year's highest-grossing independent film, taking in $33.5 million on a $6 million budget.
I guess Kevin Smith didn't have a new release that year.
No. Courageous, October Baby, these faith-based films have been making a lot of money.
Yeah, and you know why? Because these mega churches just pack up busloads of people to go see them, and, you know, it beats another night of bingo or potluck.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even in my church, I have a smaller church. But every time one of these films come out, the movie companies send a preview DVD to the church.
Oh. So,
yeah, and it has, like, a trailer for the movie, information, links to the website and everything.
Oh,
So you could play it on Sunday morning. Yeah, because our church is one of the contemporary churches that have a big screen. And, you know, play that before the service. Everyone go out, see October Baby, go see Courageous. And that's what happened in my church. It's not just mega churches.
Yeah, I remember.
It's all across the Bible Belt.
Yeah, when Passion of the Christ came out, they announced that they were making a run. I did not partake. And I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
Having since seen it.
You know, my pastor tells a story. His grandfather was a pastor, and the first movie they ever saw was The Ten Commandments, because they were like, you never go to the movies. Movies are sinful. It's bad. They only lead to bad things. But The Ten Commandments was all right. But then when they got there, they felt like so like ashamed. They were like, look, he's looking over the shoulder like someone was going to catch him at the movies. So I think the Christian sensibility towards film has changed a lot. You're seeing more Christians go to the movies and sort of expecting things to sort of pander towards them. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But as we talked about in Left Behind, it's got to be quality.
Yeah. Don't make Fireproof 2.
Yeah.
get a college kid in a screenwriting class. Give him a day and a half to go over your script. Or even the professor. Ask the professor of the screenwriting class.
Oh, well.
He obviously doesn't have anything better to do.
Yeah. Maybe getting people like Nicolas Cage. You also have, we've talked before a little bit about the No movie coming out with Russell Crowe. I think we're going to see an upturn in more of these faith-based movies.
Yeah, it's like, it's like every other trend in movies. Something makes money, so we're going to see more of them. Bridesmaids was popular, so we're going to see a lot more raunchy, female-driven comedies, with air quotes, because I didn't think Bridesmaids was that funny.
I didn't even watch it.
You know, The Hangover was popular, so now we've got three Hangover movies, Project X, which is about a party.
This is the opposite of faith-based cinema.
You know what I mean. Yeah, my point is that goes back to my point.
Whatever's
popular, it's going to get run into the ground until the well runs dry. So as soon as that Nicolas Cage Left Behind movie tanks, then it'll go back to being Left Behind 8. it'll go back to being like made for TV Left Behind movies.
Yeah. So you're
and Kirk Cameron can still be in them.
So you're calling it. You're
I'm calling it now.
I'm calling it now. Since we've made that prediction, we're going to play you a pre-recorded clip of a warm-up that we did talking about Star Wars, where we try and make some more predictions about what's going to happen to our favorite spiritual movie franchise. So, Mike.
Yes.
What are your feelings on the sale of Lucasfilm to Disney?
I have a lot of mixed feelings, actually, because I'm not sure why it needed to sell in the first place. Apparently, since I wasn't buying as many action figures, they needed some money. So, I don't know. They seem to have done okay by Marvel. There's no sense in saying, oh, now Star Wars is going to be whored out and merchandised to death. That ship sailed decades ago.
It started. It was born that way.
Right. So, that's not really an issue. I feel like I should be excited about getting new movies, and I guess I'll have to wait and see what direction that takes. It's a relief that it's not going to be stagnant. That wasn't a punchline.
No, I know, because all they've had is the Clone Wars thing, and everything else they promised us have gone by the wayside, kind of. So,
do you like Clone Wars?
It's cool to watch every once in a while, but I don't really get into it because it is more of a kid show.
I have seen every episode, and I'm still trying to like it in season 5. Have you ever seen Transformers Prime?
No.
I love Transformers Prime. I wish I loved Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a couple episodes here and there that were cool. Like the end of season 4 when they brought back Darth Maul. That was pretty cool. He's got, like, the big spider robot, because that's sort of the way I kind of imagined him coming back. But other than that, I'm not like, ooh, I can't wait for next week's episode. It's just like, oh, okay, it's on. I guess I'll watch it.
Right.
My kids are like, turn it on, and I'll kind of watch it while I'm doing dishes or something. But
okay. I guess if it had to be bought outright, then I'm glad it was Disney.
Yeah.
Because they, like I said before, they've done right by Marvel.
Yeah.
I haven't been a big fan of the Disney brand.
Yeah.
But since we had Zoe, you know, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse is kind of cute.
Yeah.
So that's kind of softened me toward them a little bit. I just worry what happens if Disney starts getting into trouble.
Yeah.
Can they sell Marvel as a whole? Can they sell Star Wars as a whole? To who?
Oh, I think Lucas said, I've always liked Disney, and I felt safe selling them to Disney. Look at all the money Disney made. They're the only place in town that could possibly buy Lucasfilm.
Right.
I don't think any of the other companies like Fox or Paramount or Universal, and any of these guys are in a position monetarily to be going out and buying empires.
Yeah.
You know, Disney, you know, you have the Disney Empire is the only one that kind of, I think, had enough money, especially after the summer that they had. I mean, yeah, John Carter may have been a misstep, but everything I've read says that movie at least broke even. And
John Carter wasn't that bad either. It just,
I liked it.
It didn't sell a lot of tickets.
Yeah, it wasn't the most fabulous movie, but the guy who starred in it, what was his name?
Gambit. His name was Gambit.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He
Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah. He was all right in John Carter, but I don't think anybody was good in Battleship.
Even him.
Nobody was good. Not even the special effect aliens were awful. Well, Rihanna was awful.
Poor Liam Neeson. Poor broke Liam Neeson.
Yeah. He was awful. Oh, man. And even the writing was awful. It's like they had the actual scripts of, like, Independence Day and Top Gun in front of them. And they're like, okay, you copy that bit, and I'll copy this out of that script, and we'll call it Battleship, and that's be good. It was awful. My son came in, and while everything was supposed to be blowing up, and it had Transformer-ish special effects. You know, it was too many particles and too much detail, too many parts and too much action too fast. So you really couldn't see what was going on. It was over CG'd, and I,
yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Disney had some missteps with John Carter.
Yeah. Well, John Carter, it broke even. And then you had like $5 bazillion. I think that was the actual figure, bazillion, $5 bazillion that Avengers made. So they had enough money to buy Lucasfilm for only $4 bazillion.
Okay. It caught me completely off guard. I didn't realize George wanted to retire or that the company was for sale. I don't know what's going to happen with, you know, is Hasbro going to be screwed? Is Cartoon Network going to be screwed?
Yeah.
The publisher of the books, Dark Horse, who does the comics. There are a lot of fingers and a lot of pies.
Yeah, how much influence is Disney going to have over
right.
that?
Right. How much do they want? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just like corporate sponsorship. Or maybe now, in the next Galactic Senate scene, we'll see Martian Mickey. I don't know. it's a big unknown. And all right, I'm going to ask you what we were talking about at work. Who's your favorite director for Star Wars Episode 7?
I want to see Spielberg's mark on a Star Wars film.
That was one of the ones that came up.
Because his style has really changed. I mean, his most famous stuff, you know, was in the 80s. The stuff that he won Oscars for was, like, in the 90s and 2000s with
Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, and if he does a Star Wars movie in that kind of style, and not like a Jurassic Park style, but in more...
What would be wrong with it being a Jurassic Park style?
Oh, that's too...
I love Jurassic Park. I think that would be the right
too.
Mix of action and character.
Right, but I'd like to see something... If he kept it more in the style of... I'm talking just visually. Just visually in the style of Minority Report or AI, War of the Worlds. If he did it like that, where he doesn't use that Spielbergian backlight, you know. If we kept that out of the Star Wars film and did something more like in his later sci-fi stuff than his earlier sci-fi stuff. I don't think that's anything he could really help. I think, you know, as he gets older, his tastes have changed. The kinds of images he wants to portray have just changed a little bit. But, you know, he's like Lucas, you know, he grew up watching a lot of movies and making movies. And they both went to, you know, the same film school. Was it
USC, I think?
Yeah. They studied the same sort of material, and they're both, like, big Kurosawa fans. Them and...
Coppola.
Coppola, yeah. I think Lucas and Coppola produced a Kurosawa film in the 80s, one of his later films. And Spielberg does that, too. If you watch The Seven Samurai and then watch Saving Private Ryan, they are the same movie. Bunch of... sort of lost and lonely soldiers go to a town and help them defend against some invaders. It's the plot of the movie. And if you look at the characters, each of the characters, like the Seven Samurai, and then all they start out with eight in Saving Private Ryan. So
and you know who the first one down is?
Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel. Interesting factoid. You may know this. When they find the first Private Ryan... The one who thinks his brothers are dead?
Yeah.
That's Nathan Fillion.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I have to go back and watch it again. Just
yeah.
To... Oh, they just kind of walk away, and he's like, wait, what about my brother? He's like, okay, yeah, that is him.
Yeah. I didn't know who he was then. It was, you know, years later, looking him up on IMDb, that was him?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear my directors?
Yeah.
I went a little new school. But Spielberg would be a fantastic choice, not to take anything away from that. I have two, David Fincher or Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Fincher would make a better movie, but think of how cool a Zack Snyder lightsaber fight would be.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Like slow motion, falling back, a lightsaber goes over their face.
Yeah.
For that alone.
I just watched Watchmen again. They had, like, the two-disc version at...
You didn't already have Watchmen?
I had Watchmen. I had like the one disc version I got when Blockbuster closed down, but they had the two disc version for $3. So I got all the bonus features and stuff, which is, you know, which were entertaining. So I watched that again. I really like it. I think he really did a good job with it, and I think you're right. That would be
the action would be cool.
Yeah,
if Fincher did it, the characters and the drama would be cool.
Yeah,
but he did the director's cut of Alien 3 is halfway decent.
Yeah,
he did Fight Club, which has a bunch of sort of action.
Yeah,
but he's never really done. He's done a lot of like thrillers, like Seven and The Game. I wouldn't call those action and adventure movies.
Well, here's we got the trilogy now. Spielberg 7.
Spielberg, Fincher, and Snyder.
Fincher, and then Snyder for 9.
Yes.
That would be, okay, this is a sound check, but in case this ever goes out, you heard it here, folks.
Yeah. We'll tack this on as an extra at the end of our the long-rumored Star Wars episode.
Yes, well, that'll be, we'll do we have a date now for our Star Wars episode.
2015.
May 2015.
Yes.
All right, so we hope you've enjoyed that little tidbit there, and
hope we kept it nice and light for your pre-Christmas listening. And
yeah, and we'll see in a few years. So we'll see in 2015 if our predictions are panning out.
It's all ramping up again. All the excitement over every little spoiler tidbit. I remember wondering whether or not General Grievous was real.
Ah, yes. Yeah, we got the first kind of tinge of him in the cartoon series.
Yeah.
And
even before then, there was a leaked drawing.
Oh yeah.
And
madness.
It's like, oh, that's not his name's not General Grievous. That's stupid.
Yep. Well, he's not as dumb as Jar Jar though.
No.
So that's the worst thing you're ever going to hear me say about Jar Jar. But, apparently we're going to have more little teasers like the General Grievous, maybe a whole movie about a side character, because they're going to do two or three movies a year, and Disney's going to follow the Marvel template with Star Wars now and
do
little spin-off movies.
Yeah, we'll see how that does. All right, well, Robert and I have to jet. We are going to try and make it to the James Bond movie that's out now. So we're going to wrap this up. Hope you enjoy It's a Wonderful Life and whatever the festive holiday season has in store for you.
And for next time, we're going to be bringing back the TV corner. I've been doing a lot of research for this one. We're going to do the movie Stargate for a review. And we'll delve into the last few seasons of Stargate SG-1, because the first part of the show, like the first 8 seasons, really follow up on a lot of the themes that were set forth in the movie. It's not a whole lot of new things there, but like the last two, it kind of jumps the shark. Richard Dean Anderson leaves the show. They bring in Claudia Black and Ben Browder from Farscape. Kind of reinvent the show. They invent a new bad guy. And that's where some interesting religious stuff happens. So I won't make Mike watch all of it. So
My wife is going to pick some episodes out for me.
Oh, okay. I'll give you a list,
and,
too.
Yeah, and you can help, too.
So, you know, some of the main mythology arcs. And we'll talk about that. So we'll talk about, the movie Stargate and then, the Ori invasion that happens in the last 2 seasons. So until then, you can find us on the internet at www.ctgpodcast.com.
On the Twitter, at CTGpodcast. If you're on Facebook, it's facebook.com/CTGpodcast.
So until then, this is Robert saying keep the faith.
And Mike saying peace out and Merry Christmas.
Merry Xmas.